Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Last October, Jewish worshipers in Pittsburgh were the target of the deadliest anti-Semitic attack on American soil. In the days after the Tree of Life shooting, Pittsburghers started using a phrase that both inspired and described the community's response: stronger than hate. But as Liz Reed from member station WESA reports, putting that maxim into practice requires a big shift in human nature.
The phrase was used by politicians like Mayor Bill Peduto the day after the shooting on the Today Show.
And I hope that everyone does understand that Pittsburgh is stronger than hate.
Celebrities like Pittsburgh native Michael Keaton standing in the rain at a rally.
If you want to see a city that's far, far much stronger than hate, you should go to Pittsburgh.
The alleged shooter was charged with a hate crime, which the FBI describes as being motivated by a bias against someone's race, religion, gender, or other protected factor. And University of Pittsburgh sociologist Kathleen Blee says that animus is often an expression of fear.
It's a fear rooted in a sense of vulnerability.
Blee has spent much of her career studying white supremacist groups.
It's important to say that the vulnerability in general is not actually true, but it's a perceived vulnerability.
One way that fear manifests is the conspiracy theory of white genocide, embraced by white nationalists and others. The theory holds that white people are being replaced by immigrants and people of color, and Blee says that message can be appealing to someone who's feeling vulnerable, like their life isn't going well.
It's sort of, here's why it's not, because there are these forces that are targeting you, that are making your life difficult, and it's given a sense of urgency. And when it becomes very urgent, that's where you have the terrible potential for violent outbursts.
At a busy corner in Pittsburgh's Squirrel Hill neighborhood, beyond a chain-link fence, behind a glass window, 11 white paper stars of David bear the names of the Tree of Life shooting victims.
This place is yet another reminder of where this ideology ends up.
Tony McAleer is co-founder of the group Life After Hate. He once believed the same ideology that fueled the attack on the synagogue. He says deep down, the emotion that motivated him to become a neo-Nazi wasn't hate or even fear. It was shame.
I felt less than myself, and so I adopted an ideology that told me I was greater than.
McAleer points to childhood trauma as being at the root of his shame, and his experience is not an isolated one. The National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism found that childhood trauma is a risk factor for becoming involved in an extremist group. Researchers note that the vast majority of people who experience childhood trauma will not become violent extremists. But for those who do, extremist groups can provide stability.
I got a sense of belonging. I got acceptance when I felt unlovable. I got attention when I felt invisible. And I got power when I felt powerless.
McAleer says his identity as a white supremacist began to unravel after his first child was born. He now works to help people leave white supremacist groups. And he says the key to that work is compassion.
When we're compassionate with someone, what we actually do is we hold the mirror up to them and allow them to see their humanity, their wholeness, reflected back at them when they can't see it or perceive it on their own.
McAleer's work is done on an individual scale, talking to one white supremacist at a time. But those who study childhood trauma advocate for a broader public health approach, says Dr. Sandra Bloom, a psychiatrist and public health professor at Drexel University.
We know that childhood adversity increases and dramatically, in many cases, increases the risks for basically all of our major social problems. Mental health, health care, substance abuse, criminal justice, you name it.
Bloom's work is informed by the findings of a landmark 1998 study from Kaiser Permanente and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, called the Adverse Childhood Experiences Study. The policy implications could be monumental, says Bloom, because many of these adverse childhood experiences are preventable.
This is a big shift. This means really rethinking how we understand human nature.
The Reverend Paul Abernathy agrees.
How you doing? So good to see you.
Abernathy leads the Pittsburgh chapter of Focus North America, an Orthodox Christian community service group. His work is focused on interrupting the cycle of trauma with love.
It's not even about being stronger than hate. It is more even the power of love, the power of unconditional and redeeming love that we, each and every one of us, have to be committed to.
But translating those feelings into public policy is a challenge, says psychiatrist Sandra Bloom.
What we're trying to figure out is what are universal precautions around the issue of trauma.
That's the crux of a public health approach, prevention aimed at the entire population. Bloom says that's what governments and public agencies need to figure out. The task is daunting, she says, but doable.
We could stop what we do. We could decide as a species we are not going to engage in violence anymore because the price is too high.
For Here and Now, I'm Liz Reed in Pittsburgh.